Learned Daf Samach Tes in Masechtas Ksubas. We're going to start right at the top of the Yomid. So the Gemara beforehand is talking about the idea that when a daughter gets married, the husband has to give a dowry. Okay, and the Gemara is really making a comparison between what the Gemara refers to as Parnasa. Parnasa is referring to the dowry versus Mezoinos, which is what the father would support the daughter on a regular basis going forward, so she can eat going forward. Okay, so that's what the Gemara is, that's the sugya that we're in the middle of. So the Gemara now starts on the top of Samach Tes Amud Aleph. Tolele Rav L'Rebi Bene Chitim. So Rav wrote a letter. He was writing a hello letter to Rebbe, and between the lines, as the Gemara, that's the translation of the words, Berechita means between the lines, he asked him a question. He asked him a shaila. He asked him as follows: Ha'achim sheshibdu mahu. So we're talking about, as we said before, that a father has an obligation to support the father, and that means also, by the way, the sugya that we're talking about is that the father died, and now the money's in the estate, and the estate is supposed to be used to support the daughter, and the father died, and the children then went ahead and took the property that was supposed to be used to support the daughter, and they were meshabed it, and they made it, they used it as collateral for something else. So mahu. What's the halacha over there? Does the daughter have the right to undermine the sale, or we'll see, undermine the shibud that it has to pull back the money to get her support? Okay, so this was the question that was posed to Rebbe. Have Yosef Reb Chiya Kamei. So Reb Chiya was sitting there in front of Rebbe, Amar Lei, and he said to Rebbe, Machroi Omashkenoi. What are we talking about? Shibud is a very open-ended word. It could mean one of two things. It could mean simply that the property still exists, but I use it as collateral for a loan. Or it means that they literally sold it to somebody else with the understanding that if they ever need to pull it back, the other person has first rights, has first dibs on that property. So what are we talking about? Did they actually sell it? Or did they just use it as collateral on a loan? Amar Lei, so Rebbe answered, very interesting. My nafkamino, what difference does it make which one of those cases he's talking about? Ben Machrei, Ben Mashkenoi, whether he sold it or he just used it as collateral, Maitzien Leparnoso, Vein Maitzien Lemezoinus. We would be able to pull the property back. In other words, her lien, the girl's lien, the rights that she has to use it for the dowry, that trumps, that takes priority. But it doesn't take priority for the sake of just giving her money for support on a daily basis on how much she needs. And what's the difference? So the Mefarshim explains, simply because Parnasa is a set amount. It's a set amount, whatever. It might be a larger dollar amount in one sense, but Lemaisa, it's a set amount. It's 10% of the property. We know it's $1,000, whatever it is. It is what it is. Whereas Mezoinus is not a set amount, because you don't know how much it's going to be. It goes on for a while. You don't know how long it's going to last. So it's not a set amount, so there's no way you can protect yourself. So that type of shibud doesn't, that type of first rights doesn't override, because nobody can protect themselves, that nobody can do commerce, nobody can do business, because you don't know how much this person's ever going to say, oh, now I need the money. You never know, so therefore that's not a... Okay, so that was Rebbe's answer. The Rebbe's answer is that for Parnasa, that Shibud is an absolute obligation, and it overrides giving away the property to somebody else, versus Mezoinos, once the sons give it away, once the children give it away, it's gone. Okay, now, That was the question and answer. So the question is, remember, this was Rav's question. So the Gemara asks, Rav, I machru kami ba'ilei nichtav lei machri. So what was Rav's actual question? Did he mean to ask in the situation, in the scenario where the son sold it, so let him write selling? Imashkeno kami ba'ilei, and if his question really was, what's the difference if he gave it just as collateral, nichtav lei mashkeno? So why didn't he write the letter in a way that became clear, very, what his real question was? So the Gemara's answer is very interesting. Rav Tarvayo Kami Boile. Really, Rav meant to ask both questions, but he didn't want to overburden the question. The sovereign, he thought like this. E kasivna le machroi. If I specifically only ask about selling, so then it depends on what the answer is. Hanichale. So hanicha, that's, well, then I'm okay. Ishalachli, if he responds to me, demaitzin, that even in that case, the daughter is able to take the money out. Is kol shegein mashkenai. So if they sold it, the daughter has rights to it. Certainly if it's just collateral, that the daughter is going to have the rights in the case of, right, in the case of mashkenai. Ishalachli, Ein Moitzin. The problem is like this. If his answer is in a case where, again, over here was, if he wrote the case of sale, and the response is, no, I'm sorry, you can't get it back. So Akati Mashkana Kami Boili, I'm still would be left with the question, what would be the halacha if he only gave it as collateral and he didn't actually go to the extreme of selling it? I wouldn't know the answer. So therefore I didn't want to write it in a way that I would be left with having to follow up with the second question. And the other thing is also true. Ikos if Nile Mashkana, and if I only asked him originally about Mashkin, so also it depends. Isha Khalida Ain might see in if his response was that I'm sorry you can't get it back, Kol Shagain Machre, so then if I literally sold it, I'm not going to get it back. How, that would work out fine. Ishalachli might see in, but if he wrote in the case, if my question was only about the mashkin, that I only gave it as collateral, and his answer was you could take it back, akati machru kami boili, I would still be left with the question, okay, fine, collateral is not a big deal. But what if I gave it as a sale? So what would be, I wouldn't know the halacha over there. So since either way, however I asked the question, if he had a potential of answering it in a way that would only answer half the question, so echtav le shibud, I'll just write the word shibud, the mashmahachi or mashmahachi, that it could be understood to mean either way. So his response, because obviously Rebbe's a smart person, Rebbe will have to answer, well, it depends. If you're talking about this, I'll do like this. If you're talking about that, right? So lemaisa, Rebbe answered, really, there is no difference between mashkanai and machri. That's the way Rebbe answered. But the way he wrote the question was a very smart question, because this way he was able to get the answer to all the different scenarios. Fine. So Adkan, the Gemara, was talking about the way Rebbe answered the question. Now the Gemara brings another shita. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the answer is like this. Echad zeh ve'echad zeh ein moitzin. Once the sons give away the property, it doesn't even matter whether it's just a mashkin. You never get it back. So, just again, in contrast, if you remember, Rebbe's answer was that when it came to Parnosa, she could get it. When it came to Mezoina, she doesn't get it. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is arguing and saying she never gets it. Right? Even for Parnosa, she doesn't get it, no matter whether you sold or just gave it as a mashkin. Okay, so we have a machlekas. So now the Gemara wants to know, Iboiluhu. Li Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that says that you never get that once the property is gone, it's gone. The question is like this: Lo Yishmielei Hadi Rabbi? Did he not know that Rabbi gave a different psak? That he doesn't know what Rabbi heard, what Rabbi said. Vi Yishmielei have a makabale. But if he heard that Rabbi argued on him and said, "Oh, okay, fine," if Rabbi says that's the halacha, Oidimu Shmielei v'loy makabale, or maybe Rabbi Yochanan even knew what Rebbe said, and still didn't care. He argued and he held that it's a different halacha, that he didn't agree with Rebbe's psak halacha. Right? And obviously that makes a major nafkamino, because if the answer is he didn't hear what Rebbe said, and then if he heard, but had he known what Rebbe said, he would have agreed, so then there's no machlekes anymore. So it's an important question to know whether Rabbi Yochanan was doing this on purpose, or only because he didn't know the halacha. Or he didn't know, excuse me, what Rebbe said. So Toshima, I'll bring you a raya to Itmar, we learned as follows. Misha meis v'heniach shtei bonos uben. Okay, so here's an interesting case. A father dies, he has two daughters and a son. So technically, the son is the one who yarshins, because the boy always yarshins, and the son is the one who's giving out the money to the daughters. V'kodma harishoyna v'notla isr nechosim. And then the first daughter got married, and she took her nedunya, she took her dowry, and she took her 10%. However, excuse me, v'loya spika shnia ligvois at shemes haben. But then what happened was, before the second girl had the chance to get married, the son now died. Now, the relevance of that is that once the son dies, so the son was the one who was distributing the funds, but now that he died and there are no sons anymore, the daughters themselves yarshin. The daughters themselves yarshin. Now, if the daughters themselves yarshin, the daughters don't have a chiyuv to give their married sister the dowry. That there's no such thing. The sons are taking care of the estate and they give a dowry on behalf of their father. But daughters don't give a dowry to another sister on behalf. So now when the son dies, it just becomes a regular Yerusha and they split the Yerusha 50-50. The question is, do you take into account that the way the split should work is each daughter should be entitled to the dowry, and then you split the rest going forward. Or do you say, no, once they have to split, do they split right now? Which means, let's just talk about a regular $100. If we're talking about $100. What happened was the first daughter got married, she took $10. So there's only $90 left. So they're doing $90 left, do they split it? Do they split 45-45? Or do you say, no, first the second daughter gets $9, and then you have $81 and you split and each one only gets 40. Right, it's gonna make a nafkamina in the math of how you divide it up. That's gonna be the question. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, just to finish the sentence, Rabbi Yochanan says, Shnia Vitra. The second one waived her rights. So we're saying as follows. Basically we're saying the first daughter got her 10%. That's skimmed off the top. We don't take that into cheshbon already. She did it. The rest, you're left with the $90, the 90%. That, you split 50-50, and the second daughter is perfectly happy with getting whatever she gets, because she's getting 50% of the Yerusha. She doesn't get an extra dowry at all. So, Amar Rav Chanina, G'doyle Mizu Amru. So, more than this, so they said even more than this, that, so he's saying that not only does the daughter, remember, this is part of a sugya that, why are we talking about this at all? Because we're talking about the fact that we started the sugya by saying, what if the brothers were meshabed? What if the brothers gave away the property that was supposed to use for the sisters, they gave it away as collateral, right? So that's what he's talking about. He's saying, G'doyle Mizu, which is what we said, what Rebbe said on the top of the Amid, that we would also take out the money for, we would take out the money even if someone else got it. Meaning if a third party got it, we would say the dowry is that important that she gets it. And now you're going to say that this second girl doesn't care about her dowry. It's not true. We see that the dowry overrides everything. Even if they gave away the money to a third party, she would get it. So certainly if she's getting it from the sister, she should get her dowry. Okay, now remember, the Gemara's question is, let's not lose focus on what the main question was. The main question over here was, does Rabbi Yochanan agree to Rebbe, or did he hear Rebbe's halacha and argue, or did he not hear Rebbe's halacha but otherwise would have agreed with it? Don't forget, that's the main question that the Gemara is coming to answer over here. Now, so let's see how that fits in. Vim Isa. Now, if it's true that he argues, namele man amra, let us say, who's the one who says this halacha? Right? So, in other words, that if it's something that he didn't know the halacha, he should have asked, who is this man d'yomer that says that the girl gets the mezuzah? Remember, Rabbi Yochanan argued, if Rabbi Yochanan never heard of this halacha, right? If you're saying Rabbi Yochanan never heard this halacha, he should have said, he should have said, who, what are you talking about? What are you talking about that she gets for Parnassa? Why didn't Rabbi Yochanan respond? When I told you, the explanation in this brisa is but if it was collateral, the daughter gets it. If Rabbi Yochanan never heard the halacha before, he should have said, who said? Elamai must be that by the fact that he didn't respond that way is that he was aware that Rebbe said this halacha, but he disagreed. So therefore he didn't respond. He says, "Oh, okay, that's, you have a question because you're following Rebbe's opinion. So you have a question, and your question is, well, if she gets it from third parties, certainly she should get it from her sister." So therefore, that's how the Gemara wants to prove that Rabbi Yochanan heard of Rebbe and argued. So the Gemara says, "No, but Dilma lo ilam lo shmile. Maybe really he never heard Rebbe's halacha at all." And in fact, when he heard Rebbe said that the dowry overrides, he accepted that. Vishani Hasam, and this brisa is a little bit different. The Ika Ravcha Besa. Over here it's a little bit different, because that there's, she is getting so much that she doesn't care about the extra dowry that she's getting. I mean, again, the fact that she's not getting the dowry, because she's getting so much money anyway. Okay, so she might have gotten a couple extra dollars here and there. But Lamaisa, she was getting plenty. She could mathematically have gotten a little bit more, but she got plenty. So therefore, since she's getting something at this point, she's not going to make a big deal about the fact that she's losing a couple dollars. Okay, that's what the Gemara wants to say. So you're saying right now she doesn't care because she's getting money. If so, So you're saying, oh, if she's making a lot of money, she doesn't care about the little bit extra. So what happens if she's walking down the street and she finds a $10,000 check on the floor? Right, she finds $10,000 in cash on the floor. So she says, oh great, I just made a lot of money, so I guess I don't need my dowry anymore. Do you think anybody would think that? No. I happen to be lucky and I made a lot of money over here, but I still deserve and I'm entitled to my dowry. So what kind of answer is that? Oh, she was making a lot of money, so she doesn't care. Why does that make a difference? Amalei, so he says, no. Ano Ravcha Besa Mehani Nichse Ka'amino. No, you can't just say that she made a lot of money. It's not just a generic concept that if you're rich, you don't care. That's not the point. The point is that if I'm making money from this estate, I'm getting money from this estate, the extra couple dollars are not going to make a difference. You're right. If she happens to be wealthy, if she happens to have found money someplace else, that is not going to reduce the fact that she thinks she's entitled to the dowry. So the same thing over here, but as opposed to if she's, the question is if she's getting money from this estate, if I get a dollar more, a dollar less, I'm happy I'm making money, so I'm not going to make a big deal about it. Okay. So it comes out according to this, again, not that the Gemara really answered the question 100%, but at least Lamaskonas of Gemara, it seems like Rabbi Yochanan was aware of Rabbi's halacha, and he in fact argued. That would be the conclusion of the Gemara's question. Okay, even though the Gemara doesn't say it befares, because it could go either way, it's a suggestion, it could go like this, it can go like that. But Lamaisa, the way the Gemara is leaning is that they knew about each other's opinions and they argued. Fine. Amar Ameimar. Bas Yoireshes Havei. Okay, so when the daughter gets the dowry, is that considered part of the Yerusha? We're saying, Ameimar says, that it's considered in the same category as a Yerusha. Amalei Rav Ashi La Meimer. So Rav Ashi says, no. Ilu boy lisluka bezuze hachanami do laimotzi lisluka. So I don't understand. If it's a Yerusha, so that means I'm entitled to that, and I can say I'm entitled to 10% of the entire estate. Now, if the brothers wanted to say, okay, let's just say for argument's sake, 50% of his estate was in land and 50% was actual hard cash. So the brothers can say to her, we're not giving you 10% of the land, the real estate, because that's annoying. We'll just figure out mathematically how much money that adds up to, and we'll give you $10 in cash. So, now if it's a Yerusha, the brothers don't have a right to say that, because she's entitled to the Yerusha just like everybody else. Now, we could negotiate, and we could ultimately, between ourselves, agree that I'll take the cash portion and you take the real estate portion. We could always agree to stuff, but the brothers don't have a right to demand what she can or cannot take. Right? So the Gemara is saying, but the Gemara is saying, asking this as a question, what, the brothers aren't able to just pay her the money and get rid of her? They can, in other words, they can figure out how much money she's entitled to and give her that money in cash? Of course they could. Which means that it's not really a Yerusha. Or similarly, Amalei, he also asked like this. Ein, in. So Amalei, in. Yes, they could. They could be Masalik them. Iboi, lesluke, bechoda, ara, hachanami, deloimotsim, Masalik, law. Similarly, if they had many pieces of land, instead of giving her 10% of each piece of land, we just give her one piece of land. We say, this farm is yours. This farm equals 10% of the entire estate. It's yours. So do you think they can't do that? Amalei, in. So of course he could do that. Which means, in conclusion, that it's not a Yerusha, it's just an obligation. Okay, so therefore, Rav Ashi argues and says, Bas, Balas Choyvi, Have, she's the equivalent of a Balas Choyvi, meaning they owe her the money. The estate owes her that money. It's only owed when she gets married and it becomes a dowry, and there's a need to pay a dowry. But it's an obligation of the brothers to make that payment. Not that she has a Yerusha directly from the father. Ba'afamemar Hadarbe, and Amemar also eventually retracted and he agreed to Amar Av Menyume Verei de Rav Nechumi. I was there in front of Amemar, and this woman came to collect her dowry, that she wanted her 10% of the estate to get married, and he realized based on what she was saying, the ibay lesluke bezuzay have a masalik law that if the brothers were willing to give her $10, that they would have just give her the cash and not give her 10% of everything. How do we know this? The Shmiya Me'achi, because he heard the brother saying, the Havika Amri law, they said to her, Ilu Havilon Zuze Salikna Bezuzi. If we had money, we would just get rid of you with money. Meaning, we see that he was okay with that, we see that their preference was to just pay her off in cash than to give her 10% of every little piece of the estate. The Ishtik and Amemer was there and he kept quiet. And Amemer didn't say anything. So we see that Amemer also agreed that Be'etzem they could have, if they had the money, if they had the cash, they could have just paid her off. Which means that she's not entitled to the estate itself, she's just entitled to an amount. And she's entitled to an amount, it's the brother's money, and they get to decide how to pay her. They could give her 10% of everything, they could pay her in money. So in this case, they didn't have money, so they had to give her 10% of everything. But we see that even Amemer agreed that it was up to the brothers to make that decision, which means it's not a Yerusha. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. So now that we're saying that she's just owed the money, it's not that she has actual rights to the estate. She's like everybody else. She's a creditor deserves money. Now, who owes her this money? Is it the father through his estate? Or is it now that the brothers yarshin the estate and they're controlling the estate, is it their obligation? Now, what difference does it make? Who is the borrower over here? Who owes her the money? The father, and it goes back to the original state, or the brothers? So the Gemara answers, "Lemigni lebeninis shaloi b'shvua." The nafkamina would be which property she would be able to take from. If it goes to the father, then she would be able to collect from beninis without a shvua because she's entitled to that right away. The ziburis b'shvua, or from the brothers, she would take ziburis, because then it becomes like any other bal chayiv, and she would get a If it was the brothers, then she gets to collect from the beninis, and she doesn't have to swear, because if it belongs to the brothers, they're not quote unquote yisaimim; it's their money. So just like I go to anybody else who owes me money, I have a right to take beninis. I have a right to take the half valuable property. Whereas if it's their yisoimim, if really her taina is against the father, and the brothers are just running the estate on behalf of the father, then the brothers are, now that the father died, yisoimim. I mean, again, I'm not getting into the technical word of what a yosim is, but they're in the category of yisoimim. Okay, so therefore, you're not allowed to collect without a shvuah. You can never take money from yisoimim without swearing. And whenever you take money from yisoimim, you have to take ziburis. You always take the bottom rung, the lowest level of property when you take from yisoimim. So that would be the nafkamina. So are they collecting from the father's estate and the sons are just running it for him? And they're like yisoimim? Or is she really taking directly from them? Now that they got the money, they have a chiyuv, they have a personal chiyuv to the daughter. To their sister. So what is it? How do we look at this? So Toshim, I'll bring you a proof. It's Ravina Agve Labarte de Ravashi. So Ravina collected for the daughter of Ravashi, Mimar Bere de Ravashi, from the son of Ravashi. So this is exactly the scenario. Ravashi died, had some property, and the daughter now wanted to collect. And what did they do? Collected Beninis, Shaloi Beshvua. Okay? So we see that he collected from the son, from Beninis, without a shvuah, which means he considered it the son's money, not the father's estate. However, the Gemara then continues and says, "Mibere de Rav Sama, bere de Rav Ashi." He collected from Rav Sama ziburis b'shvuah. He collected it from Rav Sama, who's also a son of Rav Ashi. There, he collected it as ziburis b'shvuah. The answer is really what happened was over here. No, notice, by the way, the difference is that he collected from Berei de Rav Ashi. In one case, he collected directly from the son of Rav Ashi. And in the second story, but in Rav Sama's case, Rav Sama himself was Nifter, and she was collecting from the son, from the grandchild of Rav Ashi. So what do we see from this? So in that case, they were collecting ziburis. Now, if the halacha was that it actually belonged to, if the halacha was that it belonged to if it belonged to the sons, then it would belong to the son over here also. It would belong to the son of Rav Sama as well. So by the fact by the fact that you're only the fact that you looked at it back as the original estate and you're only able to collect from Ziburis is a raya that it goes all the way back up to the father. That's the way the Tosfos Rid learns. Okay? Sorry, I said it backwards. No, I said it backwards. You're right, the way you were thinking. The fact that when he collected from the son, Ravashi's son himself, he collected from Beninus, is a raya that it belonged to the brothers themselves. Mm-hmm. Over here, the reason why you were collecting Ziburis is because Rav Sama himself was already Nifter and he was giving it to his grandchildren. Giving it to Ravashi's grandchildren. So at that point you were collecting from Yisoimim. Right. But you weren't collecting from the Yisoimim of the original father, you were collecting from the Yisoimim of the son. So therefore that's why you were only able to collect from Ziburis. Which by the way, alright, so, now if so, Shalach le Rav Nechemya, Berei de Rav Yosef, le Rabba, bar Rav Huna. Rav Huna Zutra minahardo. So he sent him a letter and he said as follows, I'm giving you a letter ahead of time. This woman is about to come and ask you a question. She should be able to collect her 10%, even from itzterublo. Itzterublo means the base of a grinder. Of a mill, which is very heavy and it doesn't move, and it has a lot of value. But she's entitled to 10% of everything, including this 10% of this heavy object, okay, which is like karka. So if that's the case, by the way, we see that it becomes like a Yerusha from the father, that she gets 10% from everything. So Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi says, "Ki avina bei Rav Kahana. When I was in Rav Kahana's yeshiva, having magvinon afilu me alma debiti, they were collecting even from the rent of the houses. So we see again, not like we've been saying until now, we see that she gets it like a Yerusha, that she's entitled to 10% of everything across the board. It's basically the entire estate is meshubed to." The daughter for her dowry. That seems to be the Gemara. Shalach le Rav Anan le Rav Huna. Oh, so that's a very interesting story. So Rav Anan sent Rav Huna a letter. And he wrote in the letter like this. Huna Chavrin, Huna my friend, Shalom. Shalom, okay. Said like Shalom Aleichem. Ki also, he said, Ki Isa Ahu Itzazal Kamech, again, similar story. This lady is going to come in front of you and ask you a question. Agva Isra Nechose, to collect, to give her the 10% that she's entitled to as her dowry. Havi Yosef Rav Sheshes Kamech, so Rav Sheshes was there in front of Rav Huna when this letter came. Omar Le, and he said, Zil Emele, go tell Rav Anon the following, Ubishamta Yehei, and you should be in Chayrim if you don't repeat my message exactly as I told you to repeat the message. Mandaloi Omar Le, Anon Anon, Mimikarkoi Amitaltoloi. Who said this, Anon Anon, which is a little bit of a chutzpahdika way to call, even though he was Rav Anon, but he didn't like the fact that he called him Huna Chavrin, my friend Huna, right? Now, it's not appropriate. Rav Huna was the Gadol Adar. It wasn't appropriate to say, oh, Huna, my friend. You don't talk to the Gadol Adar that way. So he answered him back also in a chutzpahdika way. And he said, Anon Anon Mikar, Koy Mitaltoloi. When you say that you get to collect, right, do you mean from the land or even from Mitaltoloi? Basically, he was answering his question, but he responded to him also in a derogatory way, in the way he referred to him himself. Anon Anon. Uman Yosef, Bay Mar Zicha Bereisha, right? And he also, once he was responding to him, he also asked him a question: who sits at the head of the table when somebody is in Avelus? Okay, this is a random side question, but he did ask him this question: who sits at the head of the table by an Avel? Also, Rav Sheshes Lekame to Rav Anon. So remember, Rav Sheshes was there when Rav Huna received this letter, and he now had to respond and he had to deliver this message. Now, Rav Anon himself was a very chashuv guy. So Rav Sheshes really didn't want to talk to him in a chutzpahdika way, but Rav Anon needed to get this letter. So, also Rav Sheshes Lekame to Rav Anon. So Rav Sheshes went to deliver the message to Rav Anon. Omar Le, Mar. So he said, you should just know, Rabba v'Rav Huna Rabbe, the Rabbo. So Rabba and Rav Huna, who's the Rebbe of Rabba, v'shmutei shamit, and he put in cheir mandaloi omar le, whoever doesn't deliver this message. So he gave him a heads up and he said, I'm delivering this message because I have no choice. I have to deliver the message. And here it goes. V'ilav d'shamis lo yehave kamino. And if I didn't hear it, if I wasn't obligated to deliver the letter, I wouldn't say it this way. But here it goes. Anon anon mikarkoyim etaltaloi. So he repeated it exactly as he was told to be said. But again, he gave that introduction that I have to say exactly these words. So he said, Anan anami karkoi metaltaloi, do we collect the 10% from the karko or even from a taltlin? And also, when somebody's sitting in Avelis, who sits at the head of the table? Okay? So he delivered the message. Also, Rav Anan lekame tamar ukva. So Rav Anan went to Mar ukva. Omale, chazi mar hechi shalachli. So he said, look at the message that he sent back to me. So in other words, Rav Anan was also insulted by the way that he got the message. Shalachle Rav Huna. So he said, Anan Anan, right? So he called me Anan Anan, which is, again, not, it's a personal, it's a very friendly way of talking, but when you're talking to Rav Anan, who is like a Rosh Hashiva or something, you don't talk to them that way. V'oid, and then he asked me, Marzichyo, the Shalachli, lo yadana mayniu. So he was tricking me. He's like, he asked me this question about Marzichyo, I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what the word means, so how am I supposed to answer this question? So he was obviously trying to trick me. Omar Ali, so remember, he brought this, Rav Anan brought this question to Mar Ukva. So Omar Ali, so Mar Ukva said, Emily Easy, Gufa, now on the top of Samach Tesam Abeis, Gufa da Abda Hechi Havi. Tell me exactly the beginning of the story, what happened over here, so I can understand and respond to you why he responded this way. So he told him exactly what happened, that he sent him the letter and he called him Huna Chavrin. So Omar Lei, so Mar Ukva said, Gavra de lo yoda mai niu Mar Zichya. So somebody who doesn't even know what a Mar Zichya is, now I told you that it means an oval. But he was saying, you don't even know what a Mar Zichya is. Shalach Lei Rav Huna Chavrin. You're able to put Rav Huna on your level? You don't even know what a Marzichya is, and you're talking to Rav Huna as if he's your buddy. Okay, so therefore, basically, Mar Ukva took Rav Huna's position and said, that was a chutzpah, you should never have addressed the letter that way. Okay, now the Gemara gets back to the point. Mar Marzichya, what is a Marzichya? What is it? So the Gemara answers, Oval, it means somebody who's sitting in Avelis. Tachsiv, as the Pasuk says, Koyamar Hashem, Al Tove, Beis, Marzich. Right, the Pasuk says, supposedly in Yirmiyah it says, don't come to the house, don't go to the house of an Ovel. Okay, so we see that the word Marzech means Ovel. Okay, fine, so now we know they didn't really answer the question, but at least now we know what the question was. So now, okay, so let's actually answer the question. How do we know an Ovel sits at the head of the table? Shanaimer, the Pasuk says, Evchar Durocham, Darkom, excuse me. Evchar Darkom, the Eshev Roish, and they should pick their way, and they should sit at the head. The Eshkoin Kimelech Begdud, and they should sit like a, they should live like a king at the head of the army. Kasher Avelim Yinachem, right? The way the Avelim are accepting Tanchumen. So now, fine. So therefore, we see that the Oval sits at the front. But the Gemara says, Yenachem Acher Mashma. The word Yenachem sounds like it means that he is being Menachem other people. So he's not the Oval. Someone else is sitting at the table, at the head, giving him Nichumim. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Yenachem Ksiv. It's written without an Aleph. So since it's written without an Aleph, so therefore we understand Yenachem means the person who is receiving the Tanchumim. Fine. Anyway, so the conclusion of the Gemara is that the person receiving the Tanchumim, i.e. the Ovel, he should sit at the head of the table. Mar Zutra Omar Mehocha, he brings a different Pasuk. Vesor Mirzach, this is a different Pasuk. Excuse me. There's a different Pasuk about that a Marzach means an Ovel. It says, Vesor Mirzach Sruchim. Fine. Sruchim, right, that they turned away from the Avelim who were Sruchim, who were smelly. Mar Vizach, that he's bitter and he's not fresh. Nasa sar l'sruchim, he becomes the head of the sruchim, he becomes the head of the bitter people. Okay, anyway, so we see very clearly that the word marzach means somebody who is not happy, and it means an oval. Okay, finally, now, we never really answered the original question. The original question, he asked, right, he told Rav Huna, you should collect from the 10%, and then he asked Rav Anon, does the 10% come from Karko, or does it come from Metalfilin as well? He never really answered that question. So finally, the Gemara says, the 10% that we're talking about, the dowry, is only calculated based on real estate, not on metaltolin. Ben lemazoni, ben leksuva, ben leparnosa. And that calculation is true about all the different things that a father has to support the daughter. We don't calculate the percentages and the obligation to pay from metaltolin. All these things, we only take the obligation of the sons to continue to support the daughter is only from karka, whether we're talking about feeding her, whether we're talking about l'ksuba ben l'parnasa, right? When you're writing the parnasa, the dowry, that has to come only. We calculate that the numbers based on the father's real estate holdings, not from metaltolin. Now, zog the next Mishnah. Hamashlish Mois Lebita. Somebody knows that his daughter is going to get married, so he wants to set up a fund for his daughter, and he gives it to somebody else to take care of it, to buy stuff for her. Vehi Oimeres, and the daughter itself says, Ne'emon Bali Alai. I trust my husband. I don't want this third guy, whoever this third guy is, to take care of my money. I want to give it to my husband. He should take care of it. So the Mishnah says, Yasa Hashlish Masha Hushlish Biyodoy. Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, no. This third party that was appointed by the father, he stays in charge, regardless of the fact that the daughter would rather trust the money in her husband's hand. It stays with the third guy, and he takes care of everything. Rabbi Yosi argues, and it says, no. Lamaisa, what's this guy going to do? All he's going to do is he's going to buy a field. He writes to the Maichra, and if this daughter wants, she could sell the field and take the money for herself. She could sell the field right now. So therefore, what's the point of having somebody else buy the field so that she could sell it, so that she could give the money to her husband? Just give the money to her husband right now. What are you trying to accomplish anymore? But then the Mishnah finishes off and says, "B'medvar mamur b'gedoyla." This is only talking about a gedoyla who's able to make these kinds of decisions. Avo b'ketana ein ma'ase ketana klum. But if you're talking about a younger girl who doesn't have kinyanim and all that kind of stuff, so she can't do, she can't make these decisions. So even according to Rabbi Yosi, would agree that we're not going to listen to what the daughter says. The third party is going to take care of everything. Meir's philosophy on this is mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. That if the father said, I want this guy to be in charge, then we have to listen because we have to take, if somebody asks for it, then we have to listen to what they have to say. So that's why Rav Meir says that we stick to what the father said, even though it's not really logical for him to be taking care of it anymore. But that's what he wanted, so that's what we're gonna do. Okay, so now the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Hamashlis Mois L'chasnoi, somebody who gives money to his son-in-law, likach mehen sada lebitoy, for the sake of buying a field for his daughter. The Emeris, he's not the Bali. And she says, no, I don't want this other guy to take care of it. I want my husband to take care of it. So the halacha is, min ha-nesuin ha-reshus biyodoy. If they're already married, so she has the right to take the money out of the third party and give it to her husband. Min ha-eris in yasa ha-shlish ma-shahushlish biyodoy. Rameir again, Lishitosoi, says that if they're not married yet, then you still have to listen to what the father says, and you let the third party take care of everything. Again, because mitzvah the kind of Rameis. You have to do what he says. Rabbi Yosi Yomer says, no, it doesn't make a difference whether they're engaged or married. He says, Gedoylo, if she's already a big girl, ben mina suin, ben mina erisin, arishos biyoda. If she's already can make her own decisions, so at that point it doesn't matter what stage she's up to, she can make her own decisions. You give it to her, to whoever she wants. Ketano, but if she's still a young girl, ben minan asuin ben erisin yasa shlish masha hushlish biyodoy. Then if she's still a little girl, she can't make her own decisions, so then you always have to listen to what the father said, because she can't make her own decisions anyway. Okay, so now My Beinat, what is the case that, since Rabbi Yossi himself is agreeing that by Katana we don't listen to her, and by Gedola she could do whatever she wants, so my Beinat, what's the real nafkamina between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi? The nafkamina would be, because according to Rabbi Meir, he said it depends on whether she's married or not married. If you want to say that she is married, but she's only a little girl, that would be possibly a nafkamina. That would be where they argue. The Rabbi Meir Sabar Arshus Biyodo, because Rabbi Meir says, well, she's married, she could do whatever she wants. But also Rabbi Yossi the Meimer, Rabbi Yossi steps in and says, no, Afilu Min Anasu and Nami, even after she's married, Gedoyla in Katana Loy, it's only because she's a Gedoyla. But if she's a Katana, even after she's married, she doesn't have a right to say anything. So you want to make that into the Machlekes, however that doesn't work. So Ema Seifa, look at the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah itself says, and this is even going according to Rabbi Yossi, it says, Afilu B'Katana Ein Maisa Katana Klum. The end of the Mishnah says that by a katana, nothing she says ever makes a difference. Right? She's too young to be making these decisions. Now, Haman Katani Law. Who was the one in the Mishnah itself that said this? Is this going according to Rabbi Yossi's opinion or Rabbi Meir's opinion? Ilema Rabbi Yossi. If you go according to Rabbi Yossi, Hamareisha Shamas Mino. We already know this from the beginning of what Rabbi Yossi said, the Amar Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi himself, the way he phrased his shita was v'chiena el asada v'hiroitz el moichra, that it's all you're going to do is buy a field, and if she wants, she could sell the field. Harehi mechura me'achsho. So it's as if the field is already sold now, so you might as well give her the money. Now, in order for Rabbi Yossi to make that statement, so it has to be gedoy labas zvini in katana delabas zvini he loy. So he can only make that statement if she's already a gedoy. Even Rabbi Yossi himself that says that even after marriage it only depends on whether she's a gedoyla or a katana, even before or after the marriage. By a katana, it's never anything. So nobody would agree. So it can't be that the end statement is going according to Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi already made his statement when he gave his shita about whether or not we listen to the daughter. So the end of the Mishnah is not quoting Rabbi Yossi, Ela Rabbi Meir hi. Oh! So it must be the end of the Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Meir Shita. V'ich suri mechsara v'hachi k'tani. And that means the end of the Mishnah was missing a few words, and the way to read the Mishnah, end of the Mishnah is like this, because we'd be skipping out of order. You had first Rabbi Meir Shita, then Rabbi Yossi Shita, and then this last line of the Mishnah would be going back to Rabbi Meir Shita. So you'd have to read it like this. Yasa shlish masha hushlish v'yodoi. That you got, the third party always does whatever was given to him, what it was told to do. That's only talking about from Erisin because he's supposed to do what he's supposed to do. But once they're married, she has the right to override and decide. Now, all of this is to fit into the end of the Mishnah. When do we say that she has the right to override when they're married? The Gedoyla. Even after they're married, she also has to be a Gedoyla. So by the katana, what she says is nothing, because the katana doesn't have a right to buy and sell property. Okay, so all of this, by the way, this took 5-6 lines in the Gemara, all of this was to prove that there is no machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir in the case where she's already married but still a katana. Everybody would agree, even Rabbi Meir would agree, that since she's a katana, she can't do anything, and Rabbi Yossi also agrees, if she's a katana, she can never do anything. So there's no machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi in the scenario, even after she's married, if she's still a katana, that her word is nothing. Okay, so the Gemara's original question was, what's the nafkamina? What would be the nafkamina between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi? What would be the case? Right. Gedoylo min ha'erisin ika beinayu. The nafkamina would be if she is a gedoylo, but she's only engaged. According to Rabbi Yossi, she's a gedoylo. She says, "Listen, I can control what ultimately happens here anyway. So you might as well just give it to me now." And Rabbi Meir says, "No, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. Even though it's true she could manipulate that she gets it, but for now, I want to do what the mace said, what the father said. So we're going to leave it, and we're going to leave it by the shlish, and he's going to control." Alright, so the Gemara says like this, Itmar, Rabbi Yehuda Omar, Shmuel, right, we learned Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel in the name of Shmuel, Halacha ka Rabbi Yossi, we pass him like Rabbi Yossi. In other words, if she can ultimately control what happens anyway, there's no point in playing the game over here, we might as well just listen to what she has to say. However, Rav Omar Rav Nachman, Rava quotes Rav Nachman that says halacha ki Rav Meir, we pass like Rav Meir, that it's mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Okay, so that's okay. Now we're gonna stop over here, even though I know there's about 4 or 5 lines left to the end of the Amud because it's late and it fits into the Gemara going forward anyway. So we're gonna pick up over here on the two dots next time, Amir Tzashem.